Hello, and welcome to the Untitled Female Driven Podcast. We are three film and TV writers who are here to talk about how to make it as professional writers in the entertainment industry. So this podcast covers what we wish we'd known when we were getting started, so that you lovely listeners can learn the easy way what we learned the hard way. I'm Erica Schreiber. I mostly write for features.
I'm Jess Cho. I mostly write for television.
I'm Hannah Rosner, and I also mostly write for television.
And you're here to talk today about world building. This is part one of our episode about world building because we have so much to say about it. We got an email. I was so excited. We've gotten some really nice emails from listeners. So this email was from Alana Jones, and I'm just going to read it to you all so you can know kind of where we started with this. She said, "Hi, I'm really enjoying this podcast. I am writing my first pilot, so your podcast has been very helpful to me. Thank you so much. Since all of you have worked in genre storytelling, I'd love to hear about world building and creating the mechanics of supernatural storytelling. Any tips or shortcuts? What core questions need to be answered in order for you all to feel that the world of your story is complete enough and you can develop other areas like characters?" Well, Alana, we're going to talk all about this and we're super excited.
We are super excited. Alana, you got us all very, very stoked to talk about world building. It's very fun. So this is a great topic for us to talk about. So first of all, what is world building? You may ask. If you're a genre writer, you may be already pretty familiar with this concept. If not, either way, world building is the process of constructing an imaginary world, sometimes associated with a whole fictional universe. You develop an imaginary setting with coherent qualities such as history, geography, and ecology. It's key for many science fiction or fantasy writers. World building also establishes tone and the logic of the world that you've created that will shape your characters. So we're going to talk about all those aspects of world building. I thought we could kick it off by talking about what genres, and if we want to get specific, subgenres, we all like to write, read, and watch. Jess, what do you like to write in the genre space?
Well, I like to read and watch just about anything in the genre space. In terms of writing, I primarily focus on sci-fi and sort of off branches off of that. So like sci-fi horror, maybe some fantasy in there. And I also really love a sort of sub-subgenre called slipstream, which is, I guess, similar to 5 minutes in the future. But essentially slipstream is everything in the world is the same that we recognize, but one thing is different. And because that one thing is different, it sort of changes everything. It's kind of like if you throw a pebble into the middle of a pond and you watch the ripples. That's what slipstream is watching the ripples effect on the world.
I've never heard of that. What can you give an example of a show maybe that is in that genre?
Black Mirror.
There's also a really marvelous short story anthology called Tunneling to the Center of the World. It's basically every short story is about that. There's a world in which elderly people rent themselves out as grandparents, or like some young people, they work in a Scrabble factory and they also all spontaneously explode. Weird, random things that just sort of happen, but everything else is sort of the same.
Yeah, it overlaps a little, I feel like, with grounded sci-fi, but grounded sci-fi supports more changes. Like slipstream is kind of the ultimate grounded sci-fi because you recognize it so wholly, but there's also this one thing that's specifically different. Or exaggerated.
That's super cool. I love that I just learned that because I feel like I do watch a lot of stuff that is slipstream and write in that world.
So I feel like for my stuff, I mean, I love genre stuff in general, just like Jess. Some of the things that came to mind that I love to write is utopian sci-fi, which is like Star Trek is utopian sci-fi. It's like imagining a better world in the future.
Aspirational.
Yeah. I love high fantasy. I love grounded fantasy, maybe even more. I like hopeful YA dystopia, if that makes sense. Like if I'm going to have dystopia, I want teenagers who are running around making the world a better place. And I love that world of supernatural stuff, especially with elements of horror. And I love life-affirming horror, which is a term that I feel like maybe me and the people I'm pitching with on this movie made up, where it's like, you know, Ready or Not is life-affirming horror, right? Where you get to the end and you feel good as opposed to bad.
I think I need to switch to utopian sci-fi. I write a lot of dystopian sci-fi. And now that we're sort of living in a dystopia, it's not as fun. You know, it used to be escapist and now it's just a mirror of the real world. So, but yeah, I also write mostly sci-fi like the rest of you guys and not so much fantasy. I love sort of 5 minutes in the future type Black Mirror type stuff, grounded sci-fi. I find that to be a little easier for me to wrap my head around. And then I love kind of like paranormal sci-fi. I grew up watching The X-Files. I love speculative fiction, like The Handmaid's Tale. And then I've sort of been dipping my toe more into the horror space with especially my latest feature.
Exciting.
I was like, horror? Yes, exciting. But yeah, I mean, the point of world building, it's to make your world feel real, like your characters really live there. You know, you want your audience to believe that this world could actually exist so that the audience is better able to just totally immerse themselves in your world. You don't want to inundate them with details or hit them over the head with exposition to explain your world, but we'll get into that. But before we do, I guess, where do you guys like to start when you're sort of brainstorming world building?
I like to start with the premise. I feel like a lot of times that's where my genre stuff comes from. Is like, I'll come up with an idea. Usually it's I tend to write stuff that's based in mythology, but with a twist on it. And it usually comes from like, what if I took this mythological character and turned it on its head? And then once I have that idea, what world does that person inhabit? You know, like, what do I need the background and rules to be to fit that premise and let it kind of grow organically from the original kernel of the idea? I wrote a script once that I like had a dream about, which makes me sound super pretentious, but like I had this dream about like two teenagers in Singapore and this like pirate ship and all this stuff. And I woke up and like wrote it all down. And then I went to the library to research the historical context. And this is a supernatural script, but like I started with doing as much research as I could about like 1800s Singapore. And then starting from there and adding the witchcraft stuff in organically.
That's awesome. Also, not pretentious at all. I have written actually a handful of scripts that were the seed of which came from a dream that I'd had.
Yeah, it's actually probably pretty common.
When it comes to world building, I always start with the question, which is like, what if? To take an example from Black Mirror, what if like little bee robots existed and pollinated everything? For me, it's like, what if buying and selling organs for transplant was legal? And then once I have asked myself these questions, I build everything around that question, sort of block by block. You know, how does the what if ripple out and affect the world that we know and live in? How does it turn the mundane and the ordinary into something more extraordinary and more unique?
I usually start with theme, but that actually comes second now that I'm realizing it. It usually comes second to the premise or the what if, what is the concept? And so what you're talking about, Jess, what if, that's basically your premise. We're in a world where, or, you know, that's part of your premise is we're in a world where buying an organ, selling organ transplants is legal. And I usually start with that same sort of question. So I wrote a script about what if special ops spies could change their physical appearance at will.
Ooh, that's fun.
5 minutes in the future, sort of everything about our world is normal, except that this is sort of an experimental program that's been developed by the government. And so these are our leads, are this team of spies that are able to transform themselves. Traditional spycraft has been replaced with like, you can literally look like the person that you need to look like to get access to basically anywhere you need to access in the world. So I started with that concept, but where that came from was the theme that I'd been really thinking about, which was identity. Like, what if you could change the way you look, the color of your skin, the body type, whatever it is that you want, you could just change that at will. How would that ripple into, you know, your daily life? And so I started thinking about characters and what was the right, who's the right main character for that. And it was around the time of the Muslim travel ban was just coming into effect. And so I was reading a lot of stories about Syrian refugees and what they have to go through. And I was like, this is so unfair. If they were white, they would be treated completely differently. They wouldn't be put through this insane asylum process and usually sent back. And then that's sort of where the idea came from. So I think a lot of ideas can come from, yeah, just premise. What's your concept, and what's the different thing about your world that you want to explore?
Yeah, you know what I love about this is I feel like we're discussing different layers of world building here. The what if is the grounded sci-fi or slipstream question, right? What if things were a little different? And I don't write quite as much in that space as I do in the beyond what if I'm writing something that's more high fantasy or high sci-fi or whatever you want to call that. It's like really interesting to me because there's different levels of world building. I think they're both equally difficult, right? Because it's hard to do the grounded version of something because people know exactly the right questions to ask about how exactly is this different from our world. Whereas with this other level of world building, you're taking away what's familiar. The only thing that's familiar is that there are people in it and they talk to each other and they do things, right? Like everything else can be different. And so you kind of build your palace from the ground up, but people are less likely to question things because they're suspending their disbelief in a different way.
They are suspending their disbelief, but I think that what you're talking about, building the castle from the ground up, is much harder because you have to, it's like basically you've become Newton. You have to figure out what the laws of like aerodynamics or gravity or whatever it was that he discovered. You have to be the one, you have to be Einstein, you have to be Newton, you have to be the one to completely create this universe from scratch. And the laws and the rules that govern this universe have to be sound. They have to be consistent. Because even if you're dealing with magic or dragons or shapeshifters, you have to establish a set of rules for the audience so that they never get lost. So that once you establish a rule, you have to carry that rule out to the end and it has to hold. You can never sort of make it softer like Squiffy in order to get a convenient plot thing in or a character decision in.
What's nice about it though is that audiences are so much more sophisticated than they used to be. You know, like because Star Trek exists, people are more willing to accept spaceship shows. I wrote a pilot that takes place in the 1940s that's like very like noir, but it also has like this Lovecraft element to it. Even though it's world building from the ground up, you know, like I'm establishing what it's like to be in the 1940s, something familiar that I am creating from scratch, but also like throwing in this other element to create this entirely new thing. But I can use people's familiarity with those genres and kind of know that my audience is starting from a much smarter place than they would have 20, 50 years ago. And that's really cool. It's a really great time to be a genre writer.
It is. And it's so important to, when you're brainstorming, when you're at that starting point and you're trying to think about what you want to do, to absolutely not limit yourself and just let your imagination go wherever it wants. If you want to set, you know, a noir sort of that, you know, 1940s era story, and then also have this other sort of supernatural element to it, horror element to it, you can absolutely do that. I was actually looking through my old meeting grid from last year because you know, we did the general meetings conversation and we talked about how you should sort of keep a document about what you talked about and what they said the companies you met with are asking for and looking for. And so many companies are looking for genre blends. They're looking for like sci-fi horror because everything's been done. So like you got to try to come up with something different. So when you're at that initial stage and you want to try to blend a couple different worlds and different, try, you know, have some modern elements, but also have some elements that are a throwback to classic film or to like, you want to do like Indiana Jones in space, like that stuff, it works. So like, don't hold yourself back and think, oh no, there's rules against this in genre storytelling. There's no rules. That's kind of what's great about it.
The flip side of this though, that I really want our listeners to keep in mind is that when you come up with your genius idea, your what if, or your world that you want to build, you really need to do your homework to make sure that someone hasn't done this before. It would suck to write your whole script and then realize that exact same thing happens in an episode of Black Mirror. You got to keep up with stuff that interests you, you know, like do your research ahead of time. And don't be discouraged if you find something similar. Just make sure that you study it and you make your thing different enough that it stands on its own, because you don't want people dismissing what you've done because it's just like something else. It's something that reps can be really helpful with. I was working on a pilot about the first female detective in America, and then someone else announced that show and my rep immediately saw it and sent it to me and was like, I'm really sorry, you know, and we'll have, you know, like, and I could have chosen to write it anyway and she still would have tried to do something with it. But like, you know, I didn't want to compete with something that already existed, because that's just a really big reason for people to say no.
That answers the question I was going to ask. You can't really predict if somebody at Starbucks might be writing a screenplay and you're at Coffee Bean writing your screenplay and then you both turn it in at the same time and theirs gets made sooner and it's about the same thing. You can't really help that cruel twist of fate.
And that happens too. I mean, like, remember the Snow White movies that were both in development? They both came out around the same time. Like, That shit happens all the time. I think you just need to keep up with the trades.
If you can. But again, if it's like, if do whatever you can, talk to your agents and your reps about keep them abreast of your ideas, and they'll let you know if that's something that's already out there. But sometimes it just kind of happens and then you got to roll with it. I mean, I'm taking out this script. It takes place at a music festival, and I can't tell you how many places we've sent it to that they're like, well, we have a music festival project, but they don't have, it's not the same concept as ours. So, you know, don't let it discourage you. In fact, let it, you know, if you have an idea that you're really passionate about, just make sure that you then have, it's a twist and it's something unique that is probably at your best guess, not what somebody else is probably working on.
Also, you just have to figure out, like, what is it that you bring to the story that no one else can bring? Because a lot of people like, okay, I'm going to write a genre thing. I'm going to put dragons and magic and wizards and warlocks, but there's nothing in there that is so specific to the writer that it couldn't have been written by someone else, if that makes sense. You want to figure out how to put your own signature stamp on it, either from the experiences you've had, certain thematic questions that you want to ask and want answered, something about the character, perhaps something that is similar to you or someone you know. You just want to make sure that it is as unique to yourself as possible. And that way there's less of a chance that you're writing something that other people are also writing.
I think this leads us into theme really well, because the thing I love most about genre is that it's a really great way to bring in themes that are really, really relevant. I think sci-fi at its best explores social issues. You get to say it without saying it, you know? Like, I wrote a pilot, and to me, it is absolutely about the prison system and how it doesn't work for our country, right? And that I get to say that over and over again without actually saying that. And it's awesome.
The idea I was talking about earlier about the buying and selling organs or transplant. When I wrote that pilot, I wasn't really that interested in the minutia of like what it costs to sell a liver or something. It was really a pilot that explored social inequality. It explored poverty and it explored racism. Like, those are the things that I wanted to talk about. And I was able to do it within the framework of this what if slipstream idea.
So how do you guys make sure that your theme is really woven into your world building?
Basically, when you're thinking about theme, you think about the way that that can play in. And so actually the way that I usually explore a theme is through character point of view, and then having characters, the main characters of your story, represent those different points of view about whatever the topic is. So to use my current pilot as an example, it's about in the near future, tropical storms and hurricanes have just devastated the Gulf Coast of the United States. And as a result, the government says we can't keep paying for these repairs and all this destruction to these cities. So everybody's got a year to get out, and we're abandoning the part of the country that just keeps getting pummeled with storms. So where this idea came from was, obviously, I'm seeing what's happening right now with climate change. My dad lives in New Orleans. And the last time I was there, I was on a, you know, I did like a French Quarter tour, and the tour guide told me, oh, everything around us is going to be underwater in 50 years. And I was just, I couldn't get that out of my head for days. I was just devastated. I was like, how can this place that's got so much history and so magical and means so much to so many people just cease to exist, and nobody's doing anything about it? And so, you know, that really informed the story. And where, to get back to your question in a long-winded way, Erica, I was thinking about themes of obviously climate change and immigration, but also just about home and family. And is something that you value fighting for your home and fighting for your place, or do you occasionally have to give up and move on? And that plays out in the story in both a conflict between the main character and his wife, who are trying to decide whether to get a divorce. And so obviously the theme is at play there. Do you stay or do you go?
I think theme really is made manifest through the conflict that you have in your story. And the more conflict, the more push and pull, the better. And generally where conflict at its best comes from the characters themselves. Two characters fighting about something is better than a comet coming out of nowhere and then your characters reacting to it. You know, you want your characters to be active. So if your characters have very different points of view and they're constantly in conflict with one another, that is a really great way to make theme come to the forefront in a way that perhaps focusing on other parts don't.
You obviously want to know what genre your story is. If it's fantasy, it's most likely happening in some version of the past. And I don't mean like actual our world's past, but a world without technology. And, you know, everybody kind of knows what the basic elements of fantasy are and things like that. I don't even know that you need to know what subgenre you're in. You can kind of find it, but it's like you're in the ballpark and then you figure out, oh, I guess this is pretty dark. I guess this is dystopian fiction.
I mean, yeah, you can find it in the process, but I really got to say that this is a mistake that I see a lot of new writers making of know what your genre is, right? Because it's a tone thing. If your genre is all over the place, your tone is all over the place, and I don't know how to feel about what I'm reading or watching. Know your space and know it really well. And that's not to say you can't do mashups. Like when I wrote my noir thing that's also Lovecraftian, like I know those genres really well. And I worked really hard to like meld them together so that what I wrote feels like both those things and not any other things. The thing about world building is that you need to be as precise as possible in order to let your reader just exist in that world instead of asking questions like, wait, what is this? Is a question you don't want your reader to ever ask.
Most genre stories, best case scenario, like you said, they hold a mirror up to society, like the world we live in today, or you get to say something without saying it explicitly. You know, I think no matter what genre your story is, it's going to reflect an important moment in history, something that has happened. So if you're looking towards the future, if you're developing a sci-fi story that takes place in the future, most sci-fi takes place now or in the future, you also have to be able to look back and look at, is there an allegory? Because that can really help build your world and build a framework for your story. If you're looking at a modern day socioeconomic issue, obviously, like I use Handmaid's Tale as an example a lot because that's speculative fiction, sort of 5 minutes in the future story that deals with themes of power and control and religious fanaticism. A lot of themes that we're seeing playing out right now in the real world, a little too close to reality at this point. But what's so smart about what Margaret Atwood did and what they did in the show is, I remember the moment, I believe this is in the pilot, so hopefully this isn't a spoiler, but when they reveal that you think, oh, this is all happening in like the far, far future. Something has gone horribly wrong. All that's leading up to this, you know, this must have been, this could never be our world. And there's a moment in the pilot when you see that June is holding an iPhone. It's like an iPhone 5 or something. And you're like, wait. And then she gets in an Uber and you're like, wait, 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 wait.
Yeah. And she's like wearing a hoodie and she just feels like someone you know.
Yeah. It makes it feel so real and that much more terrifying. So when you're building your story, that's again why it's so important to know not just what your genre is, but the setting and the time period. And I think it shouldn't just be, sure, if you want to just write a story that takes place in the 40s because you love that time period, that's awesome. And you know it really well, that's great. But if there's a story reason why your story is taking place then. So to go back to the Handmaid's Tale example, that I think was very deliberately set in the very, very near future, just to show how close we kind of are to this happening and how if we're not careful and if we don't put checks on our government and the people in power, this can totally happen. So, you know, if that's your intention is to kind of scare people out of complacency, which I think is the point of the Handmaid's Tale, then that's just that much more effective in your storytelling.
Setting is so important, both like where and when your storytelling is. Like, obviously, if you're doing like a fantasy thing that takes place in a completely different world, you don't need to worry about when. But like, just to have a really, really visually with details showing the reader or viewer exactly where they are. You know, they have so many questions about the mythology you're setting up. Like, don't have it be a question of where and when. Like, make that as clear as you possibly can, unless it's a plot detail to be revealed or something like that, like in Handmaid's Tale. But like, the more clarity you can present on where we are, the easier it will be for the audience to engage with it. So like, exactly what year, exactly what place.
If you're going to write a genre thing, especially if it takes place in the past, you should be a person who really enjoys research. Someone who loves to read not just, you know, novels or scripts that are set in that time period, but nonfiction stuff, memoirs or articles or whatever happens to be around that time that would be helpful in building out that world. You're going to have to spend a lot of time doing that in order if you want your world to feel cohesive and true.
You don't know if your reader is better read or more knowledgeable about it than you are. This wasn't even a genre thing, but I did a non-genre script. It's like an action movie. And one of the characters is from Russia. And I wrote dialogue in Russian. And I have a really good friend who is a Russian translator. And I had him, you know, translate the lines that I wanted. And the place where it ended up, the exec who read it was fluent in Russian. And like, was really excited about it. Like, it was like a small thing. And he was just like, your Russian is perfect. I'm like, my friend's Russian is perfect. But thank you. You never know when the person reading your script might be a history buff in that specific time period or know a lot about bioengineering, if that's what you're doing, or speak Russian.
It's like commitment to detail. If you're willing to go that little extra mile, it will make a difference in the story and it will make a difference in how it's received. And it could be the thing that gets your project sold or made.
Any detail that you can take in, and it doesn't all have to go into your story, but you should know it. And the other thing about research, I used to really be lazy. I was like, I don't like reading nonfiction unless it is informing something that I'm working on because, you know, it can be boring. It's usually written in very dry language. It's not engaging like a piece of fiction. But if I'm looking at it with an eye towards how could I maybe possibly incorporate this into my story, and even if it doesn't make it into the story, it's still helpful in filling out the world and making it feel authentic and real to you and therefore to your readers. But another thing that's great about research that helped me get over my hatred of research and now I love it is it can give you a lot of great ideas. And so like when I was working on my Syrian refugee who gets the ability to change his appearance story, I was reading a lot about Syria and about the civil war in Syria. And I was also reading a lot about ISIS and sort of terrorism and shit was dark. Had to watch puppy videos after reading, and I'm probably on some watch list for some of this. I can't believe I did this. I downloaded a PDF 80-page document that was written by female ISIS members who have been indoctrinated. And I was like, why am I doing this? This is terrible. I don't recommend doing this, but it gave me really great ideas. And it also helped me get into my villain's head. I had this female, I was like, I can't wrap my brain around this. How could a woman want to not only subject herself, but other women and bring them into this world? And I read this document and I was like, I get it now. I totally understand her point of view. This piece of propaganda, which is so, you know, against everything I believe in, is also, I see their point. And you have to be able to, again, that's about character and less about world building. But,
you know, character is world building. World building is character. And that document that you downloaded, which definitely put you in some watch lists, it was a window into this woman's soul, right? And you needed that in order to properly build out the world so that you could tell a story that had a lot of truth to it. I will say, just as a side note, as a writer, you're going to be on watch lists if you do your job right.
Oh, yeah. Like, I have, like, what can you build a bomb out of?
Yep.
You
know? Yes. Like, yeah, that was one of the writer's assistants I know. He was like, okay, so I'm definitely on watch list because in 1 week I had to research, like, how to build a bomb, how to break into the Capitol.
Yeah. Wait, how to break into the Capitol?
Yeah, well, literally sure? That. I know. It was a little... Yeah, he's fine. He's a fine guy. But it's like, you just have to be willing to put that stuff in your source bar and just know people are watching you.
Yeah, there's a lot of wonderful elements that are specific to genre, which is probably why we like it so much, like monsters and robots and magic. So for me, it's about making sure if you have those elements in your script, that there is a good reason for them besides that they're fucking cool.
And you should think about what do those elements represent? You were talking about robots. Like in The Matrix, obviously the robots are trying to enslave humanity, and it's very clear why they exist. It's not just because they're cool and scary. They were probably created by humans at some point.
Have you seen The Matrix? We made them. It's our fault. They're integral. You can't have The Matrix without the evil robots.
If you can't decide whether your monster, robot, magic, etc. are necessary, just think like, if I cut this out of my story entirely, would it change anything? If the answer is no, you don't need it.
You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be 100% plot relevant. If it adds to a character, if it adds to the tone, if I take this beat out with this magic spell gone awry, like, it doesn't change the overall plot, but it changes the tone of the scene to not be funny anymore. You know, like then that element has justified its existence. But you also have to have rules for these things. You have to know exactly what your evil robots can and can't do. You need to know how your magic works. I think this is, magic is one of the big ones, right? Because it's something that is a universal element, right? But magic in Harry Potter is very different than magic in Lord of the Rings, right? That we understand, both those writers are very clear. In fact, it's what's kind of funny about Tolkien is that he's not super clear about it, but you understand it anyway, right? Like, I don't actually know what Gandalf can and can't do, but he's such a human character that I get it. You know, like I see his failings and I see when he's powerful and like all that. And when you introduce a new, a new version of magic, like when you introduce something that wasn't previously possible, then you need to make that feel like a real part of the world or else people are going to bump on it.
It goes back to the earlier note about making sure that the laws of your world are consistent. And it's, a lot of people think of magic as like a get out of jail free card. So it's like you've got your characters in the deepest dungeon ever and it's like, oh, just use magic to get them out. That is incredibly unsatisfying to read and to watch. The minute magic becomes your answer for everything, you've completely erased the conflict inherent in your stories, the conflicts that and the obstacles that your characters are going to have to overcome. And you've just basically sapped your story of all the tension that it had. So once you figure out what the rules of your magic are, stick to them. Don't make magic such a handy tool for everything that you basically create a story that's devoid of any obstacles.
You know, when you have superpowers and stuff like that, like I think about Shazam, you know, and how he's like having so much fun saving people and he's got all these powers. And then someone shows up with better powers, you know, like, and then then you suddenly have, you know, such great conflict and such difficulty. Like these things, if you're using superpowers or magic, really know what the cost of that is.
Thinking of the show that Jess works on, The Boys. What's so great about The Boys? These are like the most extremely powerful beings on the planet. And so, you know, in that case, physical limits aren't really where the conflict comes from. The conflict comes from the fact that there is a cost and it's their humanity. Often these characters have lost their humanity because they're so powerful and so revered and treated as gods and have the powers of a god that, you know, they are pretty much able to do whatever they want with impunity. And that's really the central where a lot of the conflict of the show comes from. So good job, Jess.
Oh, thanks.
Going back to like the robots of the Matrix, they are like super powered, but they have these specific weaknesses that gives our characters room to fight back. In general, having your character be an underdog is going to help an audience identify with them a lot more. You know, it doesn't have to be like Jason Bourne's not really an underdog because he can cut through anything that comes his way. But for the most part, you want to make sure that what your characters are up against are bigger and scarier and more powerful than what your heroes are doing.
My first lesson in having limits to powers, because I always loved genre since I was a kid, I would read stuff about teenagers with superpowers. That was pretty much my brand and still is. But I remember I saw The Phantom Menace in theaters and my mom, who is, you know, not a writer, but very shrewd about these kinds of things. She was like, afterwards, she was like, God, they use the Force for everything. It was so boring. It was like, oh, we've been captured by the Empire. Well, we'll just use the Force and get out. We'll just use the Force to do this and that. It's like, but that was the number one takeaway. It was like, wow, there's without conflict, because there's this ability that these characters have to just do anything, then there's no stakes. There's no suspense.
Yeah, the Force was their get out of jail free card, and it made the movie so unbearable.
Yeah. Also Jar Jar.
But on that note, I feel like this is a good place to wrap up part one. We'll talk about even more like practical ways of world building, like, you know, when you get stuck or the funnest parts and looking at, you know, other things and learning from them and some helpful tips about how to get that done. Join us next time
for part two of world building.
We have much to say. So thank you so much for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at Untitled Female. You can email us just like Alana did, and maybe we'll do a whole episode about your question at untitledfemaledrivenpodcast@gmail.com. You can also, if you want, if you're enjoying the podcast, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We'd really appreciate it.
Go build some worlds.
Go build some worlds.
And join us for part two.
Bye.
Bye.